Welcome to Conversational Hypnosis Revealed. I'm here interviewing its creator, Igor Ledakhovsky, who's going to give us an insider's look at the power of conversational hypnosis. Igor, welcome to the call.
Hi, and thank you very much for having me here.
Did I pronounce your name correctly, Igor?
Oh, you did a perfect job, so thank you. And the world now knows it's Ledakhovsky, not Ledakhovsky, which makes me very happy.
Yeah, I can imagine that. That comes up a lot. Igor, we're talking today about your number one selling hypnosis program, The Power of Conversational Hypnosis. How did you come to record that program, and what makes you qualified to do that?
Well, what happened was some years ago, I used to be a lawyer working for a big city law firm in London, and I decided I wanted to leave. I wanted to go into the field of hypnosis. Just it was a much more fun and much easier on my social life and actually my life in general. But I really regretted leaving that field because I really enjoyed working with the people there. They were very smart. It was a very high-powered environment. So my way of coming around that was this thing of doing executive coaching. I'd be working with the same kind of people. I'd still be, you know, charging high fees and so on. But, of course, I'd be doing something that I love doing around law, which was good, but it wasn't as inspiring.
Okay.
But there's a problem. The big problem I had was this. I was trained as a hypnotist, and I'd been training myself on holiday time and other times on the side. But if you go to an executive, let's say the president of GlaxoSmithKline or the head of a bank, and say, I'm going to hypnotize you and your lead team to do better, it really doesn't come across very well. It just does not fit that genre, if you see what I mean.
Sure.
And but then the dilemma I had was, first of all, that was my training anyway, and secondly, I knew the power of hypnosis. It's a really powerful tool. You can make amazing changes really quickly, totally transform people's lives, especially when they themselves have no idea where to take things. So I was kind of in a dilemma, and of course the solution to this dilemma was infuriatingly hinted at by the work of Milton H. Erickson, a psychiatrist, a doctor, who revolutionized hypnosis, created the field of indirect hypnosis, and he would just talk to people, tell them stories, and be very conversational, and just create these amazing changes with people. He was and still is a real hero of mine. Now, I had all the pieces lying there in front of me. I knew what I wanted to do. I knew the people I wanted to work with. I kind of had an idea of how to work with them. I knew I couldn't do it with regular hypnosis because it just wouldn't be accepted, but I wanted to use hypnosis. And I knew that Milton Erickson's work somehow had the key to everything that I was trying to achieve. The problem now was that no one could show me how to use his work in a usable format. I mean, things like a handshake induction and stuff like that, it just didn't cut the mustard. And even with storytelling and so on, a lot of people told you, tell hypnotic stories. And they might even say, tell isomorphic stories. But that's about the sum of it. That's as far as they'd go. Sometimes, some real bright spark would go out there and he'd give you a story to memorize so you could tell it exactly the same way again. Now, if you know anything about Ericksonian hypnosis, then you know that memorization and just regurgitating someone else's story is about as far removed from that whole process as possible. So that's the kind of dilemma I had in. Now, because no one was there to teach me how to do this, I decided to teach myself. In other words, I took the principles, I started teasing out the little bits from Ericksonian hypnosis that were truly conversational. I went out and I spent a fortune. I spent over $120,000 just flying around the world, meeting the best hypnotists I could get my hands on, watching them in action, going to their seminars, paying for one-on-ones. I paid up to $5,000 just to be able to spend a day or two with a hypnotist one-on-one and pick their brains. And bit by bit, I started teasing out a little principle here, a little something there, a little nuance there, a little bit of language here, and started piecing it together. Eventually, I managed to get to the point where I had a thriving practice. I was working with Fortune 500 companies. I mean, the real big shots in the field. And I was charging, depending on conversion rates, around about $7,000 a day to basically work with these people and get all the results I was going for.
Wow.
So that's kind of the background to where conversation hypnosis came from. That's what I wanted to teach people. In fact, the irony is I started teaching conversation hypnosis before I met Cliff and we started this whole process. And the way that came about was because, you know, I'd spend, I typically have a coaching contract with an organization where they'd sign me up for 6 months of coaching an individual. And that would be my usual minimum. So during that time, we'd get a huge amount of stuff done. And invariably, at the end of those 6 months, they would turn around and say things like, "Wow, I've just been through this crazy roller coaster ride with you. How do you do that? I want to be able to do that with my teams. I want to be able to do it with my customers," because, you know, you can imagine there are times when they weren't really willing or able to change, and I had to kind of trick them into getting to the place they wanted to be anyway. So they wanted to be able to do that with their customers in terms of sales, with their own teams in terms of lifting the performance and so on. So I started putting together the conversational hypnosis program, initially just as a one-to-one mentoring thing I would do with these guys, because they've been through actually experiencing it. They knew it from the inside out. And eventually I met Cliff, and Cliff and I sat down and we decided, you know, I wanted to get this knowledge out to the whole world, because really, first of all, I love hypnosis. It's a real passion of mine. I think it's the most amazing gift. I have received so many good things from this field. But when I look around and see the standard that's out there, there is no reason for someone, shall we say, some of the poor operators that are out there. And I'm not saying that everyone is poor. There's some amazing people there. But given what we know about hypnosis right now, there's no reasons why people should flounder. There's no reason why people should be stuck. Why people should do bad hypnosis. The knowledge is out there, and I wanted to get it out there, and that's really how we started the ball rolling, which is, let's get conversation hypnosis down, let's roll it out, let's have people learn it, and it's my sincere wish that we'll create a marketplace, we'll create a world in which bad hypnosis simply can't exist. Either bad hypnotists go out of business because they're just no good, or, and this is my preference, they'll learn solid technique, solid principles, and turn themselves from bad hypnotists into real hypnosis masters. And the transition is not a difficult one to make. It actually is a very easy one to make.
So when you went out to your clients, I can see you can't just walk into a CEO and say, you know, please close your eyes and go into a trance or do a formal induction with them. That just, it's not appropriate in that case.
No.
And so you had to find a way to get the results, to help them, you know, make the changes that they wanted to make or that they were hiring you to make, but do it in a way that that was acceptable to them. And I can just imagine a lot of situations in life where that would be valuable.
Oh, for sure. I mean, if you think about it in terms of just the idea of influencing other people, that's really what most of life is about. That's where most of our problems come from, isn't it? I mean, if we're in business, we need customers and clients to be influenced to follow a lead. If we're in leadership positions, which of course these people were, we need to inspire people to enthusiastically take up our cause rather than just grudgingly, you know, do the minimum. There's a whole field of people who just want to be able to be respected, have command the respect from people around them, and that in itself is a really valuable thing to have in life. It's part of your self-esteem. Then there's the negotiators. I know negotiators who are paid, you know, 6-7 figure sums to go out there and, you know, do amazing negotiations, get amazing deals for their institutions and so on. Even in the corporate environment, let's say you need a negotiator or a salesperson, it doesn't matter. The corporate environment itself requires you to kind of to play, shall we say, office politics. In other words, you have to get your ideas accepted. You've got to get the right people to realize that your ideas are amazing, to run with them, because then they become a successful project and then your career prospects start blossoming. So you need to get people to say yes around you all the time. Whether you're a teacher or a parent wanting to get your teens to, you know, obey you and actually do their homework or behave themselves, or you're a busy executive with a million demands on your time, or even if you're in personal relationship and you just want to enhance the quality of your relationships. I mean, so many relationships fall to pieces, or rather, people drift apart just because the fire goes out. what the hell does it mean that the fire goes out? It just means that people have stopped doing things that make their interaction rich and rewarding. So these are all examples of where conversation hypnosis adds a huge amount of value to people's lives. And of course, you know, in the field where it was developed, which is the corporate coaching field, I can attest to the fact that we had tremendous results, and you know, people really made powerful changes after having quote unquote a simple chat.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people hearing this, I think is going to be a bit of a shift in their thinking about what hypnosis is. And we have pictures about, you know, most people are exposed to hypnosis either through the stage, hypnotists, or other, you know, popular media. But what you're describing is a way of taking hypnosis and letting people, everyday people, engage it and use it as a tool for all those things you mentioned, you know, enhancing relationships, negotiating career. I think that's a major shift in what hypnosis is and does for all of us.
Well, I certainly hope so. I mean, our company's called Street Hypnosis for a reason. I want to take hypnosis out of the two traditional domains. On the one side, you have entertainment. That's people on a stage. And that's a fantastic setting. It's got a lot of value. I know some hypnotherapists don't like the idea of stage hypnosis. I used to be one of those. I now disagree because I know for a fact that hypnotherapy cannot exist in a country without stage hypnosis. I've been through around the world, and those countries that don't have stage hypnotists do not have hypnotherapists. It's as simple as that. They are the marketing arm of hypnosis. On the other side, you have hypnotherapy, and they have a tremendously wonderful role to play. They take people's pain away. They make people transform. They let people live the lives they were meant to lead rather than the limitations that, you know, some have been imposed on them. And that's a great thing. But, you know, it struck me really early on in my career that the bulk of our time, day-to-day people, everyday people, we don't spend our time doing stage performances or in watching a stage performance. And we don't spend our time in therapy or doing therapy. The bulk of people live their normal everyday lives. And seeing that hypnosis is so powerful, why should we not take those skills and apply them in everyday life so that your friends become friendlier, your colleagues become more inspired, your team just starts achieving great things. Even random strangers on the street, you just have a chat to them whilst waiting for a bus or on a plane. One of my students recently told me this. He was on an aeroplane. Actually, we were walking to the lounge waiting for an aeroplane, and he sat down next to a woman, and he noticed just randomly that this woman was shaking with nerves. So he starts having a chat with her, and you know, she finds out this girl has a fear of flying. She's drugged up to the maximum. She's getting all these pills. She's drinking alcohol, anything she can do to distract herself. And his heart goes out to this poor woman because, you know, there's no way to go about living your life, is it?
No.
So he sits down and has a chat, and this girl gets fascinated. As it happens, they end up sitting close to each other in the airplane. There's a few spare seats, so I can't remember who switches to whom, but anyway, they end up sitting next to each other, and he carries on having a chat. Before the captain's announcement comes that tells everyone to buckle up and get ready for the ride and all the rest of it, this woman is totally calm. She's looking at him and says, "I don't know what just happened, but I feel great." And all he was doing is telling a couple of stories, asking a couple of questions, you know, a little bit of confusional type questions and so on. Basically using some of the more fundamental principles of conversation hypnosis. And he's totally transformed this person, this woman, from a physical, emotional wreck into this happy, charming person who now gets to live her life out without fear. That, to me, is what hypnosis should be. It's a birthright, if you like, for human beings. It's part of how we function anyway. So why specializing just keeping these tiny little domains? Let's put into the whole of our lives, make it rich, make it successful, make it happy, and everybody wins this way.
Igor, I love that example because what that does, it helps me picture how I can use this in my life. Because when I heard conversational hypnosis or street hypnosis, I really wasn't sure exactly how I would use it and was it for me. But that example helped me get a sense of how I could use this. Do you have any other specific examples of how people, everyday people that we can relate to, are using your conversational hypnosis in their lives? Because I think it's valuable for us to hear that.
Well, I have tons of examples. I mean, our students are constantly emailing us, or when we go to a live seminar, they come up to us and they'll tell me all the things that they've been doing with this stuff, right? So we've had, let's have a think. Oh, there's one example. We had one guy who's, a lot of people are finding that using this with their family just to ease over relationships. I know one particular person, in fact, who's totally transformed all of family relationships from having this family that's constantly on feuding. They become this charming, loving family they were always meant to be, because they literally, all that happened was one person changed enough that the rest of the family just couldn't run the same blame dynamic and so on. And, you know, the family feud is basically buried and gone. There's another guy whose sister was going through a really tough time. I'm not quite sure what it was. He didn't tell me the details, but I had the sense it was something along the lines of either depression or alcoholism, some really intense thing. And he really wanted to help her. So he ended up telling her just one story. It's actually one of the stories that's on the Conversation Hypnosis course as a demonstration of COVID hypnosis in action. He takes the principles of that, makes it his own. He doesn't memorize it. He makes it his own. He adds elements into that story that fits his sister's situation, tells this to her, and this totally charmed me. She turns around and said to him like a day or two later, says, you know, something strange happened. Ever since we talked the other week, I have this real sense of hope in my life again. I mean, that in itself, at that point, I'm thinking, this is exactly what I was hoping for conversation hypnosis to be about. Just to take a completely different approach to this now, we have a student who has saved probably hundreds, if not thousands, of lives using conversation hypnosis. He's a firearms instructor. He teaches the military, particularly special operational forces. He teaches the police forces from around the world, the USA. And he teaches them in a day or two to shoot better than people who've been shooting for decades. I mean, I've actually had the good fortune of taking his program just recently, and from never having him held a gun in my hand, he had us shooting a business card at 45 feet. Now, the method he uses is ingenious, and all of it is based on conversational hypnosis. He's actually had police officers and family members calling him, telling him about their stories of how that training that he's created has saved the lives of fellow officers, of someone's family, and so on. And then they go on to describe these really horrendous scenarios where the only thing that came through was the unconscious mind pulled that person through at a time when they needed to, at a time when everyone else was panicking and missing and really messing things up. That person's unconscious mind was prepared and defended the person. They came out and you know, survived a really tough situation. So, you know, whether you're an educator, as this person is, or you're a persuader and same as a salesperson, or you're just a decent human being and making your way through life and coming across, you know, other people are suffering in tough situations where you know they don't need to suffer. Well, it just fits all those contexts, doesn't it?
It certainly does, and it's amazing when you talk about a gift. I mean, to be able to have that ability in your life to help those people you care about, to help yourself. I mean, that's – and where else do we get that? You know, it's not like in society we're constantly being presented with, trainings or situations where we can really develop those skills. You've taken something that's very specialized and kind of a – to some people, maybe a bit of off in left field, and you've turned it into a tool or a it's almost like a power we can create for ourselves. And now let me ask you this. Is it difficult to learn this? Is this something that's like – it seems kind of intimidating to develop these skills. What's your experience been with that?
Well, it's a really good question. I mean, and especially when people see the course. The course is pretty large. It's a 600-plus page manual. There's 16 CDs with over 18 hours of content and some cheat sheets to help you go along and so on. So when you first look at it, people go, oh my God, this is so much and I'll never be able to do this all and so on. Now, what I want people to realize is this. Conversation hypnosis is very, very easy to do. It has to be, Otherwise, you could never do it conversationally. Does that make sense? Think about it this way. You've had chats with friends before, haven't you?
Sure.
And how often do you sit down ahead of time and plan your conversations, your maneuvers, the stories you'll tell, the topics you'll be talking and addressing, and so on? Do you have your list there and you lay it out and say, today's agenda for conversation is, you'll say about this and I'll talk about that and we'll have this joke over here. You don't do that.
Right.
What you have is experiences. Those experiences are formatted inside your unconscious mind in such a way that when you meet your friends, your colleagues, the conversations spontaneously arise and spontaneously develop. So any system of covert influence, conversational influence, has to be at least as easy as having a chat with a friend is. Otherwise, you start becoming, and I've seen this so many times with people who try to do covert hypnosis, like NLP, unfortunately, is a little bit to blame for this one. There's a lot of people around there running out with like covert anchoring techniques and covert language patterns. But really what they're doing is they're just being really weird, right? They're sitting there and going, okay, and now thinking of things that you, like me, point, 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 are doing here. It's like robotic. You can see them switching from regular conversational mode into I'm Mr. Psycho Influence Man mode. And that destroys the whole covert context. I've literally seen this happen. In fact, I'll put my hand up. This has happened to me when I was developing conversational hypnosis. I spent probably about a period of about a year and a half or so, when I was just basically that social retard, the weirdo, that came into parties and situations and so on, and was just strange. Sorry, it's true. I had no frame of reference in terms of how to use hypnosis outside of hypnotic context, and it really wasn't easy making the shift. But you see, one of the things I learned in that period was, in order to do conversational hypnosis, you have to do it conversationally. In order to do it conversationally, it has to be easy. Now, this does not mean that it's not sophisticated, because it is very sophisticated. If you look at the cheat sheets, in terms of part of the program has these little sheets that have quick study guides, if you like, that refer back to all the little techniques and tools you have in your disposal, and they get built up into more elaborate diagrams. So the diagram starts off very simple, so you understand what's going on. By the end of the process, you have this very elaborate diagram with lots of things happening at the same time. And it can look like you're being overloaded. And here's the key thing on how to make this easy for yourself. All those skills, there's maybe some, I don't know, 120 skills. I don't know. I'm just pulling them off the top of my head. I didn't actually count them. Maybe I should sometime. But let's say there's like 120 different skills and principles involved in conversation hypnosis on a routine basis. You're not going to be doing those 120 things at the same time. You'll just totally blow yourself out. You'll overload. It's impossible to do this. Mm-hmm. So the key to mastering conversational hypnosis is to only go as quickly as it remains easy. So we'll start people off with a very, very simple skill. It might be something as simple as just observe a certain pattern of behavior in people, and that's it. Right, and you'll do this, and then you'll go to your coffee shops, and you'll sit on buses, and you'll go to public areas, or you'll be in the office, or you'll watch your family, and you'll notice interactions. You go, oh yeah, he's right, these things are happening. Now your mind's switched on. Now your unconscious mind's going, okay, something's going on here. Then we add another layer. There's more happening. There's more going on in my world than I realized. Right?
Yes.
And this is very important, because at this point, you're opening the doorway up to allow a chance to merge. You see, people think that conversational hypnosis is you doing something artificial to get an artificial state, and hence some people don't even believe that hypnosis exists. I would go the other way. My experience, and I've got a lot of experience doing this now, tells me that people are constantly popping into trances. So the easiest skill in the world, and this is something you can take away right now, is if you start looking for people's natural hypnotic trances to occur as you're talking to them, as they're just sitting there, then you'll recognize it when it's happened. When you recognize when it's happened, you get to hijack it. It's one of the techniques we show you in the course how to do. If you're hijacking something that's already there, well, it's easy, because you don't have to induce it. And if you don't have to induce it, how can you ever be caught?
That's interesting. Can you give me an example of that?
Sure. Let's give me an example. everyone's had this experience. You're maybe sitting in the office, you're staring off blank into space, and someone turns around and says, "Hey, what are you thinking?" And you shrug your shoulder and you quite genuinely say, "Nothing," or "I don't know." But think about it. You just spend like 5 minutes staring blankly into space, and you have no idea what you're thinking. You have no idea what you were doing. What's going on at that point, right? What's going on, of course, at that point is you've dropped into a mini trance. Typically, what will happen is your unconscious mind will be processing some information that's been going through your head for a while, and this is your downtime to allow it to assimilate. So we need trances in order to be able to cope with life. Now, if you spot someone in that situation there, it's a very simple thing to start insinuating certain ideas, right? You might, for example, let's think of a situation. Let's say you're blankly staring at a screen and so on, and you might end up adjoining that trance with something as simple as saying, "As you continue staring at that screen, I don't want you to think anything too. I don't want you to listen too carefully right now. Just remember that when the time comes, that report that you're doing for me is going to be at the top of your list, right?" And then they'll abstractly go, "Uh-huh," and then you just carry on. Of course, they're still thinking about whatever it is they were thinking about, or rather, they're still spacing out in that pleasurable way that trance ends up doing for us. But you've just got your project prioritized inside their mind. It's happened in the background because you've attached it to the trance that's already existing. Now, if they were to pop out of that trance and go, what are you saying? Now you'll need some other maneuvers to be able to make sure that they don't overanalyze what you're doing and so on and so forth. That makes sense. So you always need variables to be able to handle different situations. Just like in a conversation, you need to have variables, ways of approaching situations, because you know the same conversation can turn to delicate subjects, to fun subjects, to safe subjects, to boring subjects, and you have to distract away from boring subjects to get something fun again. You have to deal with those delicate subjects delicately in order to, you know, take care of people emotionally. So in the same way that you have those instincts already, what we're doing with conversation hypnosis is we're going to start harnessing the instincts we already have rather than trying to develop instincts that don't exist yet. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. So I know instinctively that I can't talk the same way to everyone I meet.
Exactly.
I have to talk differently to my kids, differently to my grandparents. And so I don't have to think about that. I just understand these people require a different approach. And you're saying those instincts, we just tap into those when we're using these methods.
Exactly. Well, we're thinking of these instincts that you have as a little army of pet, I don't know, gargoyles or creatures of some sort. And you're going to build up around each one of these things that are already there, that already know how to do, how to function perfectly within their environment, your child conversation environment, your adult conversation environment, your business conversation environment, and so on. What we're going to do is we're going to train that particular animal to be exceptionally good at its task. Now, as it happens, there'll be similar things that all of them will be able to use in terms of, to use a military metaphor, whether you have a special forces soldier or a sailor or an Air Force pilot or just a regular tank soldier or something like that. All of them can use certain things. For example, the ability to shoot, the ability to be make decisions under pressure, the physical fitness, emotional integrity so that they don't fall to pieces under pressure and so on. All of them can use the same principles and the same kind of training, and then they specialize in their own way. The same is true of your instincts. They're specialized already, so you don't have to do the specialization process. You just have to prepare them to give them more firepower, if you like, to give them more things to do within the context they're already in. And that's what makes it easy, because you're not learning anything new as such. You're taking something you can already do, and you're refining it.
That makes a lot of sense to me. And so in this program, you've taken and broken those processes down step by step so that if I want to just learn something new this week, I can go when there's a specific process or a specific new skill I can acquire by going through the program. Is that accurate?
Yes. And in fact, I'd say we've gone a step further than this. You see, the problem with conversation hypnosis, and again, this is basing it back on my own experiences when I was first teaching myself or creating this stuff, and also when I first started teaching executives this thing. And remember, these were very, very smart people. I mean, real high flyers. And they were doing the most schoolboy errors in the same way that I had done. I was going, how are they doing this? And then I suddenly realized one of the big problems around conversational hypnosis is if you learn it as hypnosis in a regular sort of sense, and I'm not suggesting that learning regular hypnosis is not a good thing. I think it's a very, very good thing. It's a good foundation. But if all you do is take regular hypnosis and try to adapt it, well, then you start coming off weirdly. Why? Because conversational hypnosis requires you to fit it into conversation, which means you don't start it the same way. A regular hypnotist will say, would you like to experience a trance right now? You say yes. Says, great. Close your eyes and go into a trance, or look at me and sleep, or look at that spot over there, or whatever the induction is he's doing. A covert hypnotist cannot do these things.
So give me an example of one of those, like you said, schoolboy errors that you would see when people would try to incorporate that, and how did you address
sure.
that?
The greatest, one of the greatest errors is your tonality, right? People shift modes when they're about to get hypnotic, and then they'll go, and now, as you consider all the possibilities, imagining. Do you see how my voice is just going weird, right? Now, there's nothing wrong with your voice becoming more dramatic. But if you're going to have a more dramatic voice, then your voice should be more dramatic in regular conversations anyway. And this is the key to fixing it. The key is to have small little pieces that you can bring into a normal conversation so naturally that the blip on the radar screen, in other words, the weirdness that happens every time you do something artificial, and it's always going to happen, is so small most people will ignore it. And then soon enough that blip eradicates, in other words, it washes away. And then you'll have another skill you'll add on top of that until that blip has eradicated and it becomes natural. I'll give an example of what I mean. Let's work with the idea of power words. Power words is a way of introducing hypnotic language into everyday conversations. A simple power word is the word because. The word because has many different functions, the simplest function of which is to allow two concepts to attach together, to flow seamlessly from one idea to another, because that's how the mind functions. Now notice I just did it there. Because that's how the mind functions, right?
Yes.
So now you take this idea of a power word, and anyone who's listening to this, feel free to take this. You have a free little mini hypnosis session in action right now. Take the word because and find as many different ways of fitting it into your everyday conversations, purposely fit into lots of conversations, but so seamlessly that people don't really notice. Because when people aren't noticing what you're doing, you'll actually get away with a lot of more stuff that you're doing. Now, when you can do this naturally, because it's natural, it'll actually have a greater impact. And because you're having a greater impact, of course, your ability to use conversation hypnosis starts blossoming. Of course, you noticed I used that 3 or 4 times in those last few sentences there. Right?
Yes, I have a big smile on my face because I observed that process. Yes. So, yeah, in that example, I heard you say several times because, and each time it sounded like what you were doing, you were building positive things for me. You're saying because you're learning this, then it means you'll do something else, which
exactly.
is something I want.
What we're doing now is I'm actually activating several principles at the same time. The lowest level of principle is just the pure language. That's the power word itself, the because. Next, we have this idea that actually because has a psychological implication. The technical word for it is it's called a cause-effect. It creates associations inside the mind between one thing and another thing. There's a nice piece of influence work that's been researched that, I'll give you an example of this one. There is a law of influence which says that if you justify something, even if the justification is totally random, people are more likely to be persuaded by it. Here's an example. And they actually did this in a university. They had people queuing up for making photocopies at a university photocopy machine. And if you've ever been at a university, you'll know that these things are like gold dust. People are queuing up for ages to get to them, right?
And for those American listeners, queuing up means lining up.
Of course, lining up. So there are these people queuing or lining up, depending on which part of the Atlantic Ocean they're at. And the researcher gets to the back of the queue and starts saying to the people in front of him, do you mind if I jump ahead of you, to skip ahead of you to make some copies? And that's it, nothing else. And he got a certain amount of response. A certain amount of people said, sure, go ahead. I mean, it was slow, maybe in the 20s or 30s. I forget the actual percentage. Then they did the same thing again. This time the researcher would actually try and justify his request but with a circular justification. In other words, he's not actually adding any genuine value to it. He'd say something like, do you mind if I jump to the head of a queue because I need to make some copies now? Now, he's not actually added anything extra, has he? Of course he needs to make copies. That's why he's there. The simple fact that you were justifying yourself, even though it had no real content in the justification, skyrocketed the amount of people that actually let him skip ahead. I mean, I'm not sure if it was double or triple, I can't remember what the rate is, but it's skyrocketed. So just that simple word, because, already starts influencing people around you. The more you start using because, the more influential you become, because people start believing what you're saying is much more important than it necessarily is, or at least how they might have perceived it otherwise. Does that make sense?
Sure. Sure it does, yeah.
So do you see how we have power words? And we have a whole ton of them. The course has, I can't remember how many of them, but I think there must be at least 50 or 60 in an appendix. And it shows you how to use these as well. Each and every single one of them has this level of detail behind it in terms of its power. And yet, you don't need to think about all the psychology that's built into that simple word. You just have to be able to use it. Because when you're using it, it automatically triggers the conditions you want to be more influential. Now, I'd rather you be able to do the stuff than know all the science behind it. Does that make sense?
Sure, sure.
And don't get me wrong, I explain as much of the science as is useful without necessarily overloading people, because sometimes it's important to realize why you're doing certain things, and other times it's not. Other times it's much more important to just be able to do them. So now we have a ton of principles which have been packed into a single word, and now we can start doing exercises with a single word, bringing that word into regular conversations in different ways, and suddenly all those principles start unfolding because they're already waiting to be unfolded. Does that make sense?
So I can just take, for example, a power word and just go into conversations with it and start noticing the reactions people have and how
exactly.
It's affecting it and how they're even using it now. Just so you're just bringing me some extra awareness to my conversations, to my daily life. That's how I would start this program, by having this awareness. Like from now on, I'm going to be hyper aware of the word because and how it's being used with me and how I can use it with other people because of this brief conversation we've just had.
Exactly. And we'll take it a step further than that. If you then challenge yourself to use that word more often, then your mind starts changing. You actually start creating different connections inside the brain, because your mind starts looking for reasons to be able to say because. You can't just say, I want ice cream because ice cream is there. Right?
Right.
It's going to sound weird. And then it goes back to what we talked about at the beginning, the whole weirdness phenomenon. And it happens. And by the way, if it happens from time to time, don't worry about it too much. It's just part of the learning process, right?
Okay. Yeah.
However, if your mind is now looking for excuses to use because, not only are you being more sensitized to when other people are using it very powerfully, and incidentally, some of the most powerful language patterns I have ever come across have been given to me by accident by other people who are just saying something and not even realizing the sheer genius of what it is. And sometimes they even misspeak, or I misunderstand them, and I go, no, don't correct yourself. The original version was so much better than that.
Hmm.
Right? So you're more sensitive. You start building up richness because your mind's looking for it, and your brain is physically changing because it's looking for reasons to put in words like because, as a result of which you're doing other things now. Frame control, for example. It's one of the other topics in the conversation hypnosis class. Frame control happens automatically now. Why? Because you have to find reasons to be able to justify your because. That's called frame control. You've got to control the conversation properly to allow these things to come in. Now, frame control at a very, very small level, just be able to add the word because, is so minute it becomes natural within minutes, sometimes hours for others. Right?
Hmm. Yep.
But that's just a small piece of the puzzle. Then you add other power words, and you add other principles. Then you start putting the principles back into the power words, and you're using the power words to activate a principle rather than to learn the power words themselves. And bit by bit, the puzzle starts coming together. It starts unfolding. It starts becoming this detailed, rich map of hypnotic phenomenon. All at the same time, all the exercises, every single CD has exercises at the end of it, telling you, do these exercises in a regular conversation. and they'll get more elaborate as we continue through the program, of course. And the reason for that is so it's in a regular conversation where you want to use it and where all this richness starts unfolding spontaneously.
So if I had the program and I plugged in the first CD, at the end of that CD, you're going to give me something I can do right away to start experiencing this in my life.
You had better believe it, because I want you to succeed with this, right? People will judge me and my program according to you and what you do. If you're telling people this is an amazing program, but your life still sucks and no one's listening to you and no one's actually getting, and you're not getting any results, well then my program sucks. And I don't want that. I'm way too arrogant for that, shall I put it that way? So my arrogance dictates that you must succeed. And I have worked really, really hard to make that happen. Now different people learn in different ways, and the speed of learning I'm not concerned by. Some people need to take it really slowly and steadily. Some people rush all the way through and just get a rough picture and then come back again and get it more detailed and go back in different layers. That's all good. What I'm concerned about, though, is that you have a roadmap that makes you successful, that from the very get-go, this is not a theoretical approach to influence. This is an absolutely practical approach. If you do the exercises as they were designed, in other words, as they explained on the various CDs in the course, you will become more influential. As long as you do the exercises, and this is the important thing we talked about before, you allow your intuitions, your instincts that are already there, to interact with the exercise so it comes out as a socially coherent piece of communication rather than a socially retarded one.
Okay. So something that might come up for people listening to this is this idea that I've got to really try to learn this stuff. Like, we're all been taught in school to study hard, and we almost have to like squeeze our brows together and try and force the information in. And what I'm hearing is that really it's a process of listening to the information and just having that little step of trust that it's going to be there for you when you need it.
Absolutely. In fact, if there's one way that you want to guarantee that you will mess this whole thing up, it's by trying to do it the same way you did things in school. And it's a hard way, it's difficult, it's very conscious mind oriented, and it's bound to failure. I know, because that's how I did it at first, and it wasn't until I stopped doing it that way that I started figuring out the way that actually it can work really well. So the essence of how to, I mean, if you want to know how to do master conversation hypnosis, I'll tell you right now. It's very simple. The essence is, and you know, you can have two approaches. One approach is to listen to the CDs in order and then do the exercises and not move on to the next CD until you've done the exercises on one, on the first CD and the second CD and so on, to your satisfaction.
Okay.
The other way to do this is to listen to the whole program once, which actually kind of primes your mind, gets it ready, understands all the concepts and so on. Then you go back to the beginning, and now you meticulously go through it. I know, in fact, the firearms trainer, he would listen to all the course and all the masterclasses on top of that as well, and he would take a whole notebook and fill it with notes on how to use the stuff that he's hearing right now, which is gets his intellect engaged, which is great.
Okay.
But then the important part is this. He dropped all of that, and all he would do is play with the exercises. And let me reemphasize that word, play with the exercises. Play requires a certain kind of attitude. It requires you to actually do the exercise strictly by the book, and then to try and break the exercises, go one way to an extreme, to go another way to an extreme, just having fun around with it and messing with it.
I see.
Somewhere in that experimentation process, you will connect what you already know, those are your intuitions, with what the exercise is designed to do for you. And suddenly the whole thing comes together as a richer, stronger whole. Your instincts have just become that much more powerful, that much more influential. Then, of course, you go into another exercise and you do the same thing. You play with it. And you bit by bit, exercise by exercise, you build up this tremendous knowledge. As you're doing this, of course, your influence starts accelerating from the very beginning. I've had students telling me that within days of actually listening to the course, they're just doing a basic exercise. They don't even mean to quote-unquote influence someone. But because they're so focused on the exercise, and this is the beauty of it, by the way, they're so focused on doing the exercise and having fun with it that they forget themselves. Meanwhile, of course, the unconscious mind is expressing all these ideas. And because the interaction they happen to be in there's always something that we want from other people. It's just part of human nature. They find themselves accidentally being so much more influential. In fact, it's the times that they try least to influence others that they end up getting their way all the time. And the times that they try and do something to influence others, which technically means that they're typically means that they're doing all the old things, they're actually becoming less influential than when they're not even bothering to try. So these exercises become, if you like, a vehicle that like a opening a room up to say, unconscious mind, come in here and show me what you've got. You want the unconscious mind to express itself because that's where the power of conversation hypnosis comes from. It's conversational then. So your job is to create a context in which the unconscious mind can use the skills you're developing to influence others. Your job is not to influence others. Your job is merely to create the situation, the context, in which your unconscious mind will do this, because it has the bigger picture, it has all the bigger skills, and it can use them in a natural, intuitive fashion. Does that kind of make sense?
So you're saying that will happen to me almost naturally, just by going through the programs and being aware of this, that context will just naturally start being created. It's not something I have to really work at consciously. It's just a process, a result of going through these processes.
Exactly. You can't help but become more influential, provided, and this is the key thing, you're doing the exercises in regular conversations. If you're not doing the exercises, if you're just doing thought experiments, if you're just reading and going, yeah, one day maybe I'll start doing this, if you find yourself in conversations going, maybe I should use a couple of power words here, like the because and so on, but you go, I don't know, I wouldn't do it today, right?
Right.
Then
right.
There's nothing I can do, I'm afraid. There is nothing, there's no vehicle for your unconscious mind to express itself, for the intuitions to be sharpened into this persuasion powerhouse. But if you do the exercises, and you do them progressively, if you don't rush the exercises themselves, getting to the end of the course is not the purpose of the course. The getting into the course is just a way of getting you more rich and varied experiences. The purpose of the course is to get your unconscious mind sharpened and intuitive about this whole idea of persuasion. And each exercise does that. It holds the unconscious mind to task on a specific set of principles, and things start emerging around the edges from that, and it's that edge that we're interested in. It's rarely the actual exercise itself. It's what happens at the edge of the exercise. So really, I say to people, do the exercises. Have fun with them. If you have difficulty with one, sometimes you can skip it and just move ahead and don't worry about it too much. Other times, it's important to go back to it and really drill it so it becomes natural. Why? Because it tells you where your unconscious mind needs a little bit of help to get it going. Does that kind of make sense?
It does. And so what I'm getting from this is that just by starting, by taking the step of using any of the stuff you're talking about, any power words, any of the principles, just engaging in a conversation with it, even one time, and just noticing things, I can see how that will be very exciting to start seeing that process happen. It's not going to be a hardship to start playing with this stuff or practicing it. You're going to start seeing results, and you're going to be naturally wanting to go deeper and further with it.
Exactly.